Welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm joined again by John. How are you doing today, John?
I'm doing excellent. I can't wait for our third, right? This is our third video chat?
Yes, this will be our third one. We've done two running backs, and then we're going to do the receivers today. We're pumping out the shows at a pretty good rate. Here, when we get closer to the season, we'll probably do multiple shows a week. I don't know if it'll be both of us on all three. We'll probably go three shows a week during the season. I don't know if we'll both be on there, but I know that we'll be on, you know, the majority of them, I'd say, both of us. I'm excited to talk receivers today. You have to have a running back to be successful in fantasy, but where you kind of make your money, especially if you're in a dynasty league, is your wide receivers. You know, they're your big high scores, your most consistent scores. So I think just starting off, we're going to go through the top 20. John, I'll just kind of let you start at the top and we'll just kind of go from there.
So sure. So I'm very lucky because I get to work for the Football Diehards, and I have my rankings in the latest Draft Book magazine, the top 25 receivers that came out on the bookshelves this week. And what I've been doing all off season is I always like to compare the fantasy football calculator, the average person, including the experts, because they pull it from so many different sites. So right now I'm looking in the last 3 days, they're actually pulling mock drafts from 1,220 sites. So I like the fact that you have a lot of different people with a lot of different perspectives. And I like to compare what I personally think in my rankings against what the populace thinks. And I like to do that because I want to kind of get a sense of where I can draft players. So one of my favorite players that I have in the top 20 this year, Jordan, that I have at number 9 is third-year wide receiver Mike Evans of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Okay.
I think he is an elite player. I had him ranked second coming out of the draft out of Texas A&M. I actually thought that he made Johnny Manziel, not Johnny Manziel made him. So I was all high on him. Now, the interesting part about Evans is I think you've actually had two extreme touchdown catch seasons. I think the 14 touchdowns as a rookie might have been an outlier. And I definitely think last year's 3 touchdowns were an outlier. I don't think he might never replicate 14 in his career. That's such a great number. But I think that maybe the norm will be between 9 and 11. I think the targets will be there for him. I expect his catch rate to increase. All we need is a 4 or 5% increase on the catch rate, and Mike Evans will have a tremendous season. So I've been drafting Mike Evans all year long in the second round if he's available to me. He's 12th on the ADP amongst wide receivers, and I've been taking him ahead of guys like Alshon Jeffrey, Jordy Nelson, Amari Cooper. You know, I would even still take him ahead of Brandon Marshall. But that's why I like to really look at the top 20. How about yourself, Jordan?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Mike Evans, because when we, kind of were putting together our show notes for the week, and we said we were going to talk about ADP, when I pulled it up, you said you're using the Fantasy Trade Calculator and kind of your rankings. I have pulled up on the Fantasy Pros, which averages, you know, like, I think for PPR, it averages, the ADP of my fantasy league. It also averages Fantasy Football Calculator, Fantrax, and then one other site. One of the guys that I thought was very low was I thought Mike Evans was low. He's a 11 overall on this kind of mock rankings. I would take him for sure above guys listed ahead of him, like Alshon Jeffrey, Keenan Allen. Jordy Nelson was a guy I thought was ranked way too high. So I would be good moving Evans all the way up to number 8 in my rankings. You said you had him at 9?
I do. I have him at 9. And that's only because I like Keenan Allen so much at 8. I can't move him ahead of Keenan Allen right now.
Okay, yeah. See, I would just have him and Evans flip-flopped. I'd have Allen as my number 9. Moving up above there, though, at least on this set of rankings, we have Allen Robinson at number 7. He's a guy I like quite a bit. I think I could see him finishing, you know, in the top five ahead of guys like AJ Green. Obviously, as a Cowboys fan, I've seen what Dez can do in healthy, but there's a lot of question marks there. Not even just around him, but surrounding, you know, Tony Romo, if he can hold up for a full 16 game season. I think there's definitely a case where Allen Robinson creeps up in the top five. He could even go. I don't think he would take over, you know, one of DeAndre Hopkins, ODB, or OBJ, Julio Jones, or Antonio Brown. But Allen Robinson is a guy I like a lot. You've heard a lot of talk this offseason about how they're going to become more of a balanced offense. They're not going to be throwing the ball around as much. I've seen some people kind of want to drop Robinson a little bit, but I still like him quite a bit. Where do you kind of see him finishing, Allen Robinson, that is?
So right now, when I look at the ADB calculator and my rankings, we're almost in sync. I have Allen Robinson ahead of Dez Bryant, while the ADP calculator right now, Dez Bryant is coming out 6th and Allen Robinson is 7th.
Yep.
I agree with you with the Tony Romo coming off the injury, even Dez Bryant with his foot injury coming back. I felt that a healthy young Allen Robinson is a better chance to play all 16 games. So I put him ahead of Dez Bryant. Now, the reason I have him at 6 and I couldn't inch him up ahead of AJ Green and DeAndre Hopkins, I think he's going to have a little bit of a regression, and I hate using this word because everyone out there is discussing it. While I don't think he'll drop as far as Mike Evans did last year from 14 to 3, I think what we have in Jacksonville is kind of a strategic and philosophical change on offense. They do not want to throw the ball as often as they did last year because they only ended up winning 6 games. They're looking to make the playoffs. And I think the best way that the Jaguars are going to win games and make the playoffs is they need to play better defense and they need to run the football. And I think that's why they acquired Chris Ivory in free agency. And if you look at getting like Khalil Mack in the 2nd round, Jalen Ramsey in the 1st round, and you have Dante Fowler, last year's 1st-round pick, coming up. I think the Jaguars are significantly better on defense, which to me says that the Jaguars are not going to be playing catch-up as much. Last year, a lot of those numbers came in the 2nd half when Blake Bortles and the offense were playing against, you know, more vanilla defenses, and they were able to put up tremendous amount of yards. I still like Robinson for right around 10 touchdowns. And I think he'll end up with at least 75 catches, but I do think there'll be about a 10 to 12% drop in numbers across the board. So I put him at number 6. The calculator and myself are about on the same, but I do like Robinson, but I like the other 6 players ahead of him better.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Talk about Keenan Allen a little bit, a guy that you like just slightly ahead of where I have him ranked. Obviously, last year started off the season very strong, you know, 15 catches in week 1, 12 catches week 3, 14 in week 6. So not only was, you know, he, you know, putting up big numbers, he was, you know, putting up high volume of numbers too. It wasn't like he was just, you know, catching one ball and breaking off a long run. He was getting, you know, force-fed targets by Phillip Rivers in there. If he's healthy, I don't think there's a lot of reason for that to change. Melvin Gordon didn't impress me, you know, very much last year. Danny Woodhead is what he is at this point. I think that Keenan Allen's another guy that I could see, you know, jumping up into that top 5 this year. The big question with him is obviously, you know, health. How is he going to recover from, was it like a kidney injury last year, I believe?
Absolutely. And because I had him on all my teams, I was able to draft him in the 4th or 5th round last year, and he's coming at a significantly higher price. And I was actually watching that game. He got injured on a touchdown reception. And I remember him leaving the field. I'm like, oh, no, I can't believe it, you know, because I watched him a ton. I love Keenan Allen coming out of University of California. I thought his draft stock dropped because he ran a little bit slow in the combine. But if you watch his footwork and his short area bursts and his ability to gain separation within that 5 to 10 yards of the line of scrimmage and what quality hands he has, I love Keenan Allen, and this is a high-octane offense, a high-volume passing game. And if he could stay on the field for 16 games, Keenan Allen did just, you know, he could push 125 receptions this year.
Yeah, definitely. So moving down the rankings a little bit from there, there's kind of like a group of three receivers that are ranked 12, 13, 14 on the set I'm looking at. And that's Brandon Marshall, Amari Cooper, and Brandon Cooks. What order do you prefer those three guys in?
Right now, I know this is going to sound maybe a little counterintuitive to what the normal fantasy fan is doing, but my number 10 ranked overall wide receiver is Brandon Cooks.
Okay, I would go the same way. I would have Cooks at the very top of that tier, followed by probably Cooper and then Marshall.
I'm just looking quickie. I have Marshall at 12 and Cooper at 14.
Okay.
But I could see that. I mean, if a fantasy manager said, I like Cooper ahead of Marshall, I'm okay with that. I think there might be a little bit more inherent risk with Cooper because he's only a second-year player, where we've known the track record of Brandon Marshall. But you've got to – so it's kind of like a catch-22 here of age versus inexperience, right?
Yeah.
We have Brandon Marshall on the other side of 30, but Cooper's only done it 1 year. So I think it's kind of how each individual fantasy coach is going to analyze that. Where I do like the consistency over a massive amount of time of Brandon Marshall. I think you could argue that there's more upside with Cooper, but right now they're both going in the second round. The ADP calculator has Marshall at number 10, fourth pick in the second round, and they have Cooper at the 10th pick in the second round. But I personally like Cooks. I think he's a little undervalued, and I'm very happy to get him on the turn late second round, early third round.
Yeah, I'm glad that you like him as well, too. That's a guy that I thought I was higher on than a lot of people. You know, you look at what he did last year, you know, 84 catches, just over 1,100 yards, had 9 touchdowns. I think that the Saints are still going to be a very high-octane offense. I think Drew Brees, they've kind of transitioned to a little bit more of a run-heavy team. Not run-heavy, but run-balanced, I would say. But Drew Brees still gets out there, and he slings the ball around. Brandon Cooks, hands down, his number one guy there. He's so explosive. He's so quick once he gets the ball. Cooks is a guy I have on a lot of my teams. Amari Cooper, I have him, like I said, just barely ahead of Brandon Marshall. I like the upside there. I think that Michael Crabtree's still going to play a big role there in Oakland, but I do like Cooper there. So then you get down past that, and you kind of got Demaryius Thomas, T.Y. Hilton. If you're in a PPR league, you could probably throw Jarvis Landry into the mix there as well, and then Sammy Watkins. That kind of makes up the next four on this list here. I get why Demaryius is ranked so much lower, but at the same time, I think that he has a lot of upside. He can, you know, jump back up into that top 10. He put up numbers with bad quarterbacks before, and it wasn't like Peyton Manning was excellent by any means last year. Where do you kind of stand on, like, that next tier of guys?
So I want to just talk about Demaryius Thomas a little bit because – A, I'm a Bronco fan, so I've seen every Demaryius Thomas game since he's played in Denver. I had also seen him at Georgia Tech because he had just popped off the screen. They had first Calvin Johnson, and then they brought in this new kid, Demaryius Thomas, and I remember watching him there. But that was a low-volume passing game at Georgia Tech. They run the triple option. So it was very interesting to watch him grow into the player he's been. Now, here's one thing where I really think the difference in the fantasy football world and how intelligent and how popular this game is becoming. I think if it was about 2007 or 2008, and we had taken Demaryius Thomas last year, and I think a lot of people would have let him slip, and I could have drafted Demaryius Thomas in the fourth or fifth round about 9 years ago, because people would have been so biased. He had a terrible year changing things around at quarterback. Now I look at the ADP calculator and all the drafts that I'm participating in, fantasy fans still have decent confidence in Demaryius Thomas. I have to admit, going into the draft season in about March is when I start, I thought Demaryius Thomas might be a bargain in the fourth round. I have not seen Demaryius Thomas fall that far. He's going off as number wide receiver 17 in round three. So I think that's about where his value is. I don't think you're getting a bargain, but I think you're paying for some upside and a bounce back. So I think Demaryius Thomas is one of the more interesting players. I don't have a lot of shares, only because in the back of my mind, I'm saying to myself, I'm surprised that he's going off this earlier, but it also tells me how smart and intelligent the fantasy football community has become within the last 3 years. So I have no problem taking Demaryius Thomas there. I look right now at my rankings. I have Thomas relatively high at number 13 compared to other experts. So I'm higher on him than the ADP calculator. I've just not gotten him on a lot of my teams because of the way the draft went. But go back to your original question, because I love Sammy Watkins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I've been grabbing him in the third round every chance that I can get. And then the other opportunity that I couldn't believe, in the Scott Fishbowl League, I got Sammy Watkins in the fourth round.
Wow.
Yeah, I was just so happy to get such a high-quality player like Sammy Watkins with the upside. Now, I know the Scott Fishbowl was a little bit earlier till the recent news. So in the latest drafts, I've seen Sammy Watkins going in the third round now. But I am very high on Sammy Watkins. I have him at number 16 overall. With the recent news, I'm considering moving him up to number 14. That's how much I like Watkins. But to me, I have no problem getting Sammy Watkins. I know there is some concern about the injury, and he seems to be possibly one of those guys that might not be able to stay on the field for 16 games. But I think the upside and the talent is so incredible, I don't think you can pass on Sammy Watkins.
No, I agree completely. I think that if Sammy Watkins is, you know, completely healthy, and, you know, you can even guarantee just, you know, 14 games a season, I think that there's a situation where he finishes inside the top 10. I'm not sure you can really say that about the guys around him. I think the guys kind of going around him in ADP are going to, you know, they have a pretty low or a higher floor, but not as high of a ceiling, I would say. You know, your Jarvis Landry's or Julian Edelman, specifically in a PPR league, they're going to keep you in there. They're not going to be, you know, your top five receivers like that Watkins has the potential to blow up and turn into. So, you know, when you look at the guys going around him, I think that he provides excellent value. The rankings I'm looking at have him going as the 18th receiver off the board. I think that's criminally low. Even if, you know, he misses the first game or two, you know, getting his legs back up under him, or even if he isn't very productive, I think that, you know, if you can piece together, you know, something, another receiver with him for when he gets back completely healthy, I think that there's a chance that Watkins can really win a lot of leagues this year where he's going in drafts.
I completely, and I think you made an excellent point, Jordan. It depends if you're going for the championship.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask me, if I'm going to draft, and I'm just going to take names off the ADP calculator right around Watkins, and you alluded to this, Randall Cobb, Julius Edelman, Kelvin Benjamin, and then who's this one? I'm sorry, I had to flip the screen up a little bit. Jeremy Maclin.
Yep.
If you are saying to me which one of those players could potentially lead me to a title run, to me, it's not even close that Sammy Watkins is the guy who I could win a championship with. While all the other ones are conservative and they're nice players, I have nothing wrong with them. They're all my top 25. I don't think Jeremy Maclin's going to win you a championship. Because if we're playing in the playoffs in weeks 15 and 16, Maclin could score you. 1 week he could get you 12 points. Next week he could get you 14. But Watkins potentially could score 20 points back-to-back in two playoff games. I take Watkins in that scenario.
Yep, absolutely. Then other guys, kind of like we said in this range, specifically we'll start with, you know, Julian Edelman, Jarvis Landry. They're more of a, you know, they're your PPR specialists. They're going to catch a high volume of targets. You know, they both just kind of make a living on those little short routes over the middle. They, you know, they feast there. The other guy kind of in this tier that we haven't talked about really is T.Y. Hilton. You know, everyone knows what T.Y. Hilton is. If Andrew Luck's healthy, he's going to be, you know, an absolute stud. Where are you kind of coming in with your draft strategy on these guys? I haven't ended up with any of these three in any of my drafts so far. Have you?
So the first, I'm huge on T.Y. Hilton.
Mm-hmm.
I've been grabbing him in the third round, I would say in 80% of my drafts.
Okay.
I love his skill set. I think he is Andrew Luck's number one target, and we'll talk later about the other targets I believe on this Colts passing attack. but it is a high octane passing attack, and I think the running game is going to fall far short. If I told you that Andrew Luck was going to do over under 680 passes this year, what are you going to take, my friend?
I'd probably take the over if you give me 16 games.
Yeah, I mean, so I think if I can get a quarterback who's going to put the ball in the air maybe 690 times, I'm going to take his number one target all the time. So I'm all in on T.Y. Hilton. I actually hooked, I believe, I've done so many drafts now.
Yeah.
I have T.Y. Hilton and Andrew Luck together in my Scott Fishbowl, but I'd have to double check that. I do like taking the quarterback along with his number one receiver. But there's risk involved, and I understand that. But if you get the quarterback wide receiver who's going to throw 40 touchdowns and 14 of them is to his prime target, that's the way you're going to win a high-stakes league. You have to take that risk, and you have to find a peer that comes at a price that is affordable. So I love Hilton very much. My number, some guys that I'm very high on compared to other people here, I'm extremely high on Golden Tate. I've gotten Golden Tate in every draft until the one I did last Friday night on the Football Diehards draft or staff draft.
Okay.
I was getting Golden Tate in round 4 and 5, and one of my competitors took Golden Tate in round 3. So I was like, oh my God, someone else loves Tate more than I do. I'm in love with Golden Tate. I think he's a lock for 90 passes. So I absolutely love him. And the other one that I love to grab is Michael Floyd of Arizona. I have Michael Floyd right now as my number 23 wide receiver. I'm going to bypass Kelvin Benjamin. I'm bypassing Julian Edelman, Randall Cobb, and I'm all in on Michael Floyd. I think he's going to be spectacular this year. He led me to a couple championships last year in the second half of the season. He's got that special combination of size and speed that is very rare. He just has not put it together full season. We've seen these extraordinary glimpses of greatness out of Michael Floyd. But I think this is the year that he puts it together. I love Floyd.
Yeah, I like Floyd's talent quite a bit. I just, you know, are you worried that with as long as Fitzgerald is going to be there, that there's going to be, you know, an issue with him getting, you know, a steady serving of targets? I had him in a lot of my leagues up until this year. I didn't necessarily cut bait, but I used him as, you know, an extra piece in a lot of trades this year. I like him there. It's just he's maddeningly inconsistent. I worry that that's not going to change at least this year. In a dynasty league, I would still hold on to him. Like we said, rounding out kind of the top 20 on this ranking is Randall Cobb. There's a few guys behind him I would take ahead of him. Who would be, like, you know, the guys that round out your top 20?
So I'm kind of down on Cobb. I have him at 22. I'm not really looking to invest a ton in Cobb. I think we saw some limitations in his game. Obviously, everyone felt he would take the next step forward without Jordy Nelson, and he actually crashed and burned given that possibility. So I'm a little bit worried about him. I think he's good. You know, I have him at 22, but I haven't bought any shares yet of Randall Cobb. I do like Jarvis Landry. I have him on a few teams when his value falls. For some reason, I think he's kind of all over the board. I've seen him go in the third round, and then I've been able to drop him in the fifth round if he slips somehow. And I really like Eric Decker. I have him at rank number 25 amongst my wide receivers. The ADP right now, Eric Decker's going 27. I really like him a lot. That's kind of where at the end. I think Derek's the last of the – Eric Decker, sorry.
Yeah.
Is the last of the real, real solid number, you know, one or two receivers that you can get. I think the tier – there's risk, which I like, but I think that's the end of the great tier.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Decker's a guy I liked as well. He's a guy I would have moved up closer to, you know, top 20. A little farther down, there's some other guys that I do like and I'm targeting in drafts. I do like Emmanuel Sanders, John Brown, and then Devontae Parker, who are all a little bit farther down the list there that I could all see challenging for a top 20. I think if he's healthy, I think Devontae Parker could take a step forward where he kind of stakes his claim as, like, the next young class of elite receivers that are coming up. But let's go ahead and move on to, you know, some of the we'll switch gears here a little bit. We'll come back and talk about some ADP a little bit later in the podcast. But let's take a, you know, a step back and look at some of the younger upcoming players that I mentioned. Let's look at some sophomore breakouts. So, you know, the number one guy that you wanted to talk about and, you know, your sophomore breakout list is Nelson Aguilar, the Eagle. So I'll just let you go ahead and talk about him.
I think he's one of the most interesting wide receivers to take a look at this year if you're a fantasy football diehard. Because, one, he's going to come extremely, extremely cheap. You're not going to have to pay a lot of money for him. And I know it's a low-volume offense in Philadelphia. I do expect them to run the ball as often as possible. My question is, do they have the running backs who are going to stay healthy and on the field that allows them to run the ball as often as the coaching staff would like? But when I look at Nelson Aguilar right now, he's coming off as a 67th wide receiver, and he's in the 14th round. So you really don't have to pay any draft capital. Remember, coming out of USC, he was one of the most highly touted rookies coming into the NFL. And last year, in Chip Kelly's offense, a lot of fantasy owners thought that Aguilar would explode. Now, at the end of the day, Aguilar had your typical rookie football season from a wide receiver. We were all spoiled the year before, and we thought that that would be the norm. But if you look at Aguilar, he's smooth, he's fluid, he's a precise route runner, and he's got good size. He was an all-purpose player at USC, and he's got the NFL body and skill set to succeed. So I think if you're looking late in the draft, you're in the 14th round. I took Nelson Aguilar in the Scott Fishbowl League, I think in round 16, and I've taken him in a flyer in a couple leagues. I think he's someone you can look at. And the reports are positive out of training camp so far. And I know we have to take those with a grain of salt because it depends on the reporter and what the reporter's eyeballs see. But I think Aguilar is a guy that we have to watch, and he's worth drafting, and he comes at almost no draft capital.
Yep, I do like him. I like the next guy on the list a little bit better, and that's Philip Dorsett. The ADP shows that you know, for the general consensus agrees with that. The rankings I'm looking at have a Philip Dorsett as the 54th receiver off the board, and then they have Nelson Aguilar down at 62. So they're about 8 spots apart. I like Dorsett more this year. I think that he has a chance to really step on, and, you know, if he, you know, steps up and makes plays, I think there's a chance he could step in and kind of lock down that number two receiver role there with Andrew Luck. So you obviously like him quite a bit if you had him, you know, the second guy on this list. So where do you kind of stand on Dorsett?
I do like Dorsett, and right now he's coming off as the 54th wide receiver in the 11th round. So he's actually costing more draft capital than Nelson Aguilar. And the only reason I might be inclined to take Aguilar over Dorsett, while I do like Dorsett's talent, he's the third receiver, arguably fourth, depending on what you perceive of Dwayne Allen, the tight end. And you also have Frank Gore in the backfield who will garner some receptions. So to me, if I'm going to say who's the guy who could be number one in their offense, and if I was going to bet, there's no way Philip Dorsett could be the number one target or pass catcher in Indianapolis. Where I think there's an outside shot that when you look at that Philadelphia wide receiving core with Reuben Randall, who I don't exactly think is going to put up a ton of numbers, and I think he has some interesting value, I actually think you can make a case that Nelson Aguilar could be number one. I think in a best case scenario, Philip Dorsett passes out Dante Moncrief, even though I don't think that's possible because I like Moncrief also. So my concern is that Philip Dorsett is the third or fourth target in a high-volume passing game where I think you have Nelson Aguilar as potentially the top target in a low-volume passing game. So it's an interesting argument, but I'll take Aguilar 3 rounds later.
Yeah, that's, you know, completely fair argument. I could totally see all that happening. That's completely fair. Next guy on the list, Stephon Diggs. I'm not as high on him just because I worry that the addition of Treadwell is going to, you know, kind of stifle everyone else's value. I think in time, Treadwell is going to be, you know, the number one guy there. He looks you know, like he's going to be a game changer for them. But so I'll let you talk about Diggs a little bit. You obviously like him quite a bit more than I do.
I just think Diggs is going way under drafted. I think he had a very interesting season. We know that he came out like gangbusters. I think like in weeks 3 through 6 or 3 through 5, he was extraordinarily productive for fantasy. But once the defensive coordinators watched him on film and were able, and cornerbacks were able to get a little bit more of his tendencies, they were able to lock him down. But right now he's coming off as the 46th receiver on the board in the 9th round. Now, I'm a big believer in Laquon Treadwell. I've been drafting him whenever possible. I do think Treadwell has the potential to be a very special NFL player. But I think Diggs has a chance. He's being undervalued. I think that's what it is to me. Obviously, can you imagine if he played next to Sammy Watkins or something like that, or if he played in Arizona?
Right.
I think Diggs would have so much more value. So I understand playing in Minnesota with Teddy Bridgewater, why fantasy fans would be concerned. But what I think is interesting is Diggs did catch 52 passes last year. He did end up scoring 4 touchdowns, nothing spectacular, but that's a decent freshman season. And when you look at the Vikings, he had really no help. He actually lined up, I would assume, against the number one cornerback on all against all secondaries. And that's a very big burden for the kid coming out of Maryland. So I think there's value in Stephon Diggs. I think he'll have a slight uptick in receptions and yards. So if you told me right now that I project him at like 62 receptions for 850 yards and 5 or 6 touchdowns, I think in a PPR league, there's value in Stephon Diggs at that point.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, outside of Treadwell, there's not a ton of competition there for, you know, outside targets. So he should be able to put up some fantasy points for you this year. Moving down the list, another sophomore guy you like, Willie Snead for the Saints. I mean, any guy that's in an offense that's led by Drew Brees has a chance to put up fantasy points if he can capitalize. You know, he's had, you know, flashes here and there of him, you know, showing some decent real football skills. What do you think about him for this year? I'm curious how all the targets are going to break down in New Orleans outside of, you know, Mark Ingram and Brandon Cooks.
So this is a very interesting player. So obviously to me, if you draft Brandon Cooks, I then bypass Willie Snead. Mm-hmm. I've got my investment in that Saints high passing volume attack. So I'm pretty happy with my Brandon Cooks. I'm not looking to grab 2 Saints receivers. But in leagues that I have not been able to get Cooks, I do like dipping into Willie Snead in the 9th or 10th round. You know, here's a kid who was undrafted, caught 69 passes last year for nearly 1,000 yards. Now, he did score a very disappointing 3 touchdowns. But I believe the Saints will be better. They have a very good offensive line. I think Pro Football Focus just ranked them in the top 5. So Drew Brees is going to be protected. They also do, as we've discussed, I love Brandon Cooks. We both love Brandon Cooks. They've improved the tight end position with Kobe Fleener. I think that was a massive upgrade. And they've actually now drafted Mike Thomas, and all reports out of New Orleans, and if you've been able to see the videos, Mike Thomas has been very impressive. Now, I don't think Mike Thomas, he still has to go through the grind of the 16-game season, and there's going to be, you know, demands on him that he's not used to. So I still like Willie Snead in the 9th or 10th round. I believe that his ADP will drop. I have lots of shares of Willie Snead, so I feel pretty good about him. I think if you can get him in the 10th round in this Saints aerial attack, I think you got to take him. I mean, I could easily see him scoring 6 touchdowns and surpassing 1,000 yards this season. And I like to have a piece of that Saints passing the game every year.
Yeah, absolutely. Next guy on the list, Kevin White. I do like him probably more than anyone else on this list. I think that, you know, people have kind of forgotten, you know, the explosiveness he showed coming out of college and the reason why he was, you know, a first-round pick. You know, obviously missed the entire year. You don't like seeing that as a rookie, you know, him and Breshad Perriman, you know, taking basically their rookie years off. But I do think that there's a chance that he steps in, and then, you know, I think there's a situation where he finishes, you know, a top 20 fantasy receiver. Alshon Jeffrey, when he is healthy, is going to be the number one target there. But he has not been a pillar of health by any means. Obviously, you know, missing a year right off the bat isn't the best start for Kevin White when you're talking about, you know, injury concerns. But I do like him a lot as, you know, kind of a number two option in the passing game. I think that there's a chance that, you know, Cutler likes to get out there and sling the ball around. I think that there's a chance for, you know, garbage time fantasy points for, you know, Kevin White and, you know, Alshon on it at the same time. But as far as sophomores go, I do like Kevin White quite a bit this year.
I agree with you. The only thing, I haven't seen him on the field yet.
Yeah.
Now, I was reading about, I believe it was Jay Cutler, was waxing poetically about how incredible the talent is. I watched him a ton at West Virginia. I watched his incredible combine performance. He skyrocketed up draft boards. He is just an incredible NFL prospect at 6'3", 215 pounds. My only fear is I wonder, it concerns me they lost Adam Gase. I'm a big Adam Gase guy. I think he did a very good job in Denver, but you do have Peyton Manning, so he definitely learned under Peyton Manning. But then he came to Chicago, and I thought that the Bears would fall. I thought that it was Peyton Manning, not Adam Gase in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of felt that the Bears would kind of, they made the wrong draft decision, like coaching decision. But obviously, John Fox knew more than me. And Adam Gase put together a really good offense. You know, to me, with the talent they had, the Bears overperformed the last 2 years. And now he goes to Miami. So to me, I love White. He's a little expensive for a kid we haven't seen yet on an NFL field. Now, if you told me he ended up in the top 25, I would not be shocked. Because my draft scouting reports, everything that I saw at him at West Virginia tells me that he has the potential to be an elite NFL receiver. So I do like Kevin White very much. But I guess I'm just looking elsewhere, because in the experts' drafts and the ones that I've been doing, Kevin White is coming in around sixth-round value. And there's players that I'd rather have in the sixth round than Kevin White. I just don't want to pay that kind of investment for him, even though I do like him, and obviously the experts who are drafting him feel very good in that round that Kevin White's going to return and live up to the expectations. I agree with you. I think he's a special talent. It kind of depends on how much draft capital you want to spend on Kevin White. So there's one player that I left off, and I'll get your take on him, and then I can talk about him.
Mm-hmm.
My sophomore, and I can't believe I brain farted, it was Tyler Lockett. Absolutely love Tyler Lockett. Tell me what you think, Jordan, of Tyler Lockett.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that has the potential to be a game changer any given week in fantasy, especially if he continues to, you know, return kicks and punts for them as well. Very, very explosive athlete, shifty, good in open space. I have, you know, confidence in the Seahawks, you know, putting together an offense that can, you know, showcase the talents of their players. They're not necessarily a system where the players have to fit that. Pete Carroll does a good job of, you know, tailoring his offense to fit the tools and the explosive players he has. You know, with Marshawn Lynch officially being out of the fold this year, you know, unless he comes back in like week 3 of the preseason, which I said I could still see happening. I think that there's, you know, somebody else is going to have to step up in that offense and really, you know, make up for some of that production that Marshawn's leaving out. Enter, you know, Tyler Lockett there. I think Doug Baldwin's going to be that deep threat where it stretches the field, but I think Tyler Lockett has a chance to be, you know, the guy that catches, you know, some of those shorter, quick passes, and then he takes them 60 yards for a touchdown. Add in the fact that he gets you some of those return yards, too, if you play in a fantasy league with those. I like Lockett quite a bit. I don't have him in any leagues, any dynasty leagues, and I'm bummed about it.
You know, this is interesting because when I started my mock drafting in March, late March, early April, I was able to get Tyler Lockett in round 10 and 11. Right now in the ADP calculator, he's going off in the 7th round,
mm-hmm.
35th overall.
Okay.
On Friday night when I alluded to the Football Diehards staff league draft that we did, I took Tyler Lockett in the 6th round because I'd been in the draft with a few of the experts before and they were taking Lockett in round 7, so I wasn't going to pass him. And it I have no reason not to tell you the truth, but last year I had Lockett as the number 9 ranked rookie prospect at the wide receiver position.
Okay.
I drafted him on all my teams last year in round, 13, 14, very late in the draft. And I actually played him in the draft book league in the playoffs. I ended up losing to John Polson of 4x4 in the championship game. But I had Lockett and like Ted Ginn on my roster late in the season, and they both hooked me up. I love Tyler Lockett. I think he can be a special player. I don't know if he can ascend to the level of Antonio Brown, because I think Antonio Brown might be the best receiver of the last 10 years in the NFL. But if you told me that Tyler Lockett, I think he could have the potential to be your Keenan Allen, T.Y. Hilton, Julian Edelman type player. I think that's very feasible. I think he's special one-on-one, and I think the special teams just gives you that little extra edge. And I think the Seahawks are changing like this on this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Another guy I want to mention kind of as a sophomore breakout, but he's also one of the guys I wanted to talk about in our next segment, so it's a good transition point, is Devontae Parker. But we'll go ahead and switch over. A few more value play guys we wanted to talk about later in the ADP. Like I said, Devontae Parker fits both of these molds for us. So he's going, for the rankings I'm looking at, he's going, 33rd overall in PPR leagues. For them to be a value for me, I wanted them to be outside of the top 30. Some of the guys you listed on here are way, way deep, so it kind of works out pretty well. We have, some value plays at all areas of the draft. I like Devontae Parker a lot. I think that there is a situation where he finishes up as the number one fantasy receiver in Miami. So to get him all the way at 33, I know it's a bit aggressive, but I would take him, closer to top, 25, 26 probably.
I have no problem taking Devontae Parker there. I loved him at Louisville. He's an incredible player. I think there's value there. He is one of those players that a lot of people like. So I think if he's one of the players that you like, you have to be aggressive with Devontae Parker. I think if he's a guy that you're targeting, you could take the risk of waiting until the sixth round. But right now he's a 32nd wide receiver off the board in the sixth round. I think if he's your guy, I think you have to go after Devontae Parker in the fifth round. So I'm a big believer. If you believe in your analysis and your film watching, I think you go and get guys. I don't worry about ADP. I use it more of as a tool. So when I see a guy like Tyler Lockett going off in the seventh round, that tells me I need to draft him in the sixth round if I like him. So if I want Devontae Parker, if I go into the draft, I'm going to target him either fifth round, or if I have an early pick in the sixth round and I want to roll the dice on the turn, I could do that. But to me, if you have your guy, and I do like Parker, go get him. I think that's how you play this game. I am not someone who worries too much about ADP, and I think a lot of people are worried about being criticized. I think you have to play this game the way that you believe your analysis shows up and your roster construction. Obviously, you don't have to take, as we were discussing, Stephon Diggs in the fourth round. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But when you like a guy, go get him. And I do like Devontae Parker at 32 at the ADP. I think that's a little undervalued. I have at number 28 amongst my top 40 right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Next guy, a little bit of a value play for us. Right now he's going off the 43rd receiver off the board. That's Marcus Wheaton. He's a guy that I think could, if he, capitalizes on the opportunity that's there, he's going to step in as the number two receiver in that Pittsburgh offense. There's value that's going to be there. Big Ben's, he has a knack for making the big plays. Martavis Bryant's going to be out of the fold for the year, so that leaves, a big, big hole open. Antonio Brown's still going to be the number one guy there. But I think at 43, Marcus Wheaton, or I guess, 43rd receiver, we're talking overall, he's going, 105th overall. Marcus Wheaton, I think that he is a great value that late in the draft.
Absolutely. And I don't know if you play. I mean, I played it once, best ball league.
I haven't played in one, but I know what they are.
Yeah, like to me, Marcus Wheaton is the best, is a perfect best ball league player. So if for those who don't know, You don't have to have a starting lineup. You just draft about 25-man rosters, and whoever scores the most points at the wide receiver position, you get those points for the week. So Marcus Wheaton is the type of guy. He might get 20 points in four games over the course of the season because he hits a big home run as Big Ben is scrambling and the defense breaks down. Marcus Wheaton coming out of Washington State was a great speedster. He has tremendous wheels. I don't think he's mastered the nuances of route running completely yet, but I do think he's got value. And as the on the ADP here, he's the 41st player, eighth round. I think that's about good value. And I agree with you, Marcus Wheaton is the type of guy you can target there.
Yep, absolutely. One other guy I want to talk about in this kind of this area of ADP before we kind of jump into some of your later targets we got here, and we'd be, you know, remiss to not mention him at least once in our receiver preview, and that's Josh Gordon. Right now, he's going as the 42nd receiver up the board, 103 overall. That number is more than likely going to creep up quite a bit as, you know, the drafts reflect him, you know, being only out for four games. I would imagine he jumps up a little bit. I would still take a chance on Josh Gordon if I could get him for, you know, something that didn't cost me something super, super valuable. But I'm not giving up a, you know, a proven star to go try and get Josh Gordon. Where are you at in Josh Gordon and in regards to, you know, season long and dynasty leagues?
I'm just not willing to take the risk with Josh Gordon. And I understand why someone wants to. And he's going off on the ADP calculator in the sixth round now. And actually, in the Football Diehards draft, he went in the fifth round the other night, which I was shocked by.
So it's, yeah, the rise is coming then.
Yes. To me, the only way you can take a Josh Gordon is if you go, let's say you're one of those high-stakes players, and you go five. I actually saw someone do this, two people do it in the draft. First five picks off the board were wide receivers. I guess I could see taking Josh Gordon with the as my fifth or sixth wide receiver. But I that's not how I draft. I like to have running backs, especially in PPR leagues. But that's a different story for a different day. I'm not willing to invest a sixth-round pick in Josh Gordon or a fifth-round pick. While I hope the best for the young man, and I believe you know I'm a teacher, Jordan, and I work with young men my entire life, and I work in the inner city, and I hope this young man gets himself together because I don't think he made the worst mistake smoking marijuana in the world.
No, not at all.
You know, I mean, look, I'm no angel, so you can figure out what my perspective on marijuana is at that point. I don't think he should be. What's happened to him is unfair. I think he's made some bad decisions. I made bad decisions in my life. So I hope the best for him. I just don't want to invest in Josh Gordon in fantasy football in the sixth round or above. I would have loved to get him in the seventh or eighth round, but obviously people aren't letting him fall that far. I'm just not going to have any shares. And if I lose a fantasy league because Josh Gordon beats me in the playoffs, I'll deal with that. I'm willing to take that risk. But I'm just not interested in Josh Gordon at his cost.
Yeah, I think that that's kind of the general idea that I've gotten on myself, too. I'm interested, but I'm not interested at what it's costing right now. I think that there may be another secondary opportunity to buy, you know, maybe during those 4 weeks that he's out, there may be a chance where his value dips a little bit, you know, when someone's just sitting him on the bench and, you know, maybe gets antsy, wants to flip him for some production. But yeah, at the prices right now, I'm not going to end up with any Josh Gordon shares anywhere. So now we'll jump to two of the guys that you kind of want to talk about that were, you know, very, very late values. I kind of want to go out of order on this one because I really like your second player here, and that's a Jalen Strong. He's going off the board on average in PPR as, you know, the 86th receiver, 282 overall. I understand that Will Fuller being there, you know, kind of dampens it a little bit, but I still think that he opens the season as the number two receiver, and I think that there is a situation where he could hold on to that role, or even if he dropped to the third role in that offense, if Brock Osweiler can just be competent, I think there's room for all three of those guys to put up fantasy production.
Absolutely. I had Jalen Strong coming out of Arizona as the fifth-ranked wide receiver prospect. He's 6'2", 217 pounds. Now, he uses his body to shield the benders, and he has big hands, and he goes and gets the ball. He's not a natural burner, but he has enough nuance in his route running. He can get open deep, and we saw that at times late in the season. excuse me, I apologize.
No problem.
Now, I'm not as big on Will Fuller as some other fantasy analysts are. I'm not convinced that as a rookie, Will Fuller, to me, is going to be a one or two route runner. He's going to run the nine or the eight. And I think they're going to try to isolate him and they'll take their shots. But I do not believe that Will Fuller is going to be on the field for the majority of the snaps. I think he has some growing and learning of the game. I think Jalen Strong is the guy. For the amount of draft capital that you have to invest in this Texans passing game, I believe that Jalen Strong is the of the two, he's the one that I want between Fuller and Strong. And I'm actually looking right now, and Jalen Strong isn't even in the top 73 on the ADP calculator right now. And I'm double-checking here, but I'm absolutely shocked. So he's below. You're actually going to get – I bet you in most leagues, Jalen Strong is a waiver wire pickup.
Yeah, on the sheet that I'm looking at right now, Jalen Strong – on average, it was the 90th receiver on MFL and then 79th on, let's see here, what's DW? Fantasy Pros. He's not ranked in the other leagues at all. So, yeah, he's going way, way late.
Yeah, I mean, now it's funny, in expert leagues, you don't want to hear something funny?
Yeah.
He's going in round 12.
Yeah, see, that seems more correct to me.
Yeah, because the experts know that Jalen Strong has potential, and they believe that Brock Osweiler is an upgrade. And what I like more is he plays next to DeAndre Hopkins.
Yes.
He's not going to have the burden of the top cover corner on him. So I'm a big believer in Jalen Strong. If you can get him for peanuts, I highly recommend taking him. And the other guy that I kind of like, and this is a guy, and I like to go deep, you know, if you know me, if you read my stuff, one of my favorite things to do is go way off the charts. And the other guy that I'm actually been drafting lately, only because game script and the offense dictate opportunities, Bruce Ellington of the 49ers. Right now, he's a 72nd wide receiver coming off the board, 14th round. I took him the other day. I took him in the Scott Fishbowl League. The game script is I think the 49ers are going to win two or three games.
Yep.
I think the 49ers are going to throw the ball a ton in the second half.
They're going to have to, yeah.
They're going to have to. I think Ellington, he's a third-year receiver coming out of South Carolina. He has potentially came in with that great class of 2014, so he was overlooked by most fantasy fans because he's taken the normal course to start him, or I shouldn't say start him.
To relevance, productivity, yeah.
The productivity in the NFL. I think Bruce Ellington in that offense, if he's named the starter, and we've got to watch that closely, but I do think next to Torrey Smith, he's the best receiver on the roster right now. Can he get 60 receptions for 800 yards and four touchdowns? I think that's possible. As a 14th round pick, getting a third-year wide receiver who had promise coming out of South Carolina in that Chip Kelly offense, I'm willing to invest in Bruce Ellington.
Yeah, I mean, I think the verdict is still out on whether Chip Kelly is a good, you know, offensive mind at the NFL level. But when you're talking about guys that do fit what Chip Kelly is trying to do, Ellington is that guy. You know, he's one of those guys that you can slot in all over the field. You can put him in motion. You can run him out of the slot. You can put him on the outside. Very versatile, good athlete. So I think that, yeah, he is the type of guy that could thrive in a Chip Kelly offense. You know, him going, you know, on average, you know, 74th, I think is what I saw on there. That's way too low on him. He has top 50 upside easily. So we're getting, you know, we're about 52 minutes right now. So let's go ahead and take a couple mailbag questions, and then we'll just kind of speed through our last few things we wanted to get through. We got three questions that got sent in for us. Based on ADP, which Colts wide receiver presents the best value? That's from @JohnValencia_WIB on Twitter.
So if you're going for value, I definitely think Dante Moncrief is probably out of the three the best value. Now, he keeps moving up. When I started this in March, Moncrief was available in the sixth round. I'm looking on ADP right now. He's number 24 overall in the fourth round. So he's starting to creep up. and he's going to cost you money. But if for some reason you can't get Hilton or you're not a fan, and I understand that Hilton is one of those players who are their varying kind of perspectives and opinions on his fantasy value, I think I would go for Dante Moncrief, because if you want a part of Andrew Luck in that Colts passing game, or if you're in any type of high stakes league, I mean, I could see you're drafting Dante Moncrief in the fourth round and then trying to grab Andrew Luck in the sixth round. I think that's kind of a sneaky way to win a high stakes league. You know, I like to pair the quarterback with the wide receiver. I've been doing since I had Dan Marino with Mark Clayton, John Elway with Mark Jackson, you know, Steve Young with John Taylor. I've always been willing to pair my quarterback with the wide receiver. Some people don't like it, but I do. So I think the best value is Dante Moncrief and then trying to get Andrew Luck later on.
Yep, I'm 100% with you on trying to stack your quarterback with the receiver. I have that strategy in a lot of my leagues. But to answer the question, I do agree Moncrief as of right now is, you know, 25th receiver on average off the board in PPR leagues. He presents definitely the best value. The next question, who would you rather own in Dynasty right now, Breshad Perriman or Martavis Bryant? And that's from Dynasty Jag on Reddit. For me personally, I would still rather hold on to Martavis Bryant, but I could be swayed either way. Obviously, with Perriman, the talent's there, the first round pick, we just haven't seen it yet.
Jordan, I have to agree with you. You know, I had Perriman coming out as a second-ranked receiver out of University of Central Florida. I am in the Northeast, so I believe it or not, I'm one of the few people who watch the American Athletic Conference on a regular basis. And that's why one of the reasons I had Blake Bortles ranked number one when he came out, I had seen Bortles play about 8 games at Central Florida. Now, Blake Bortles left and Breshad Perriman stepped in, and I didn't expect him to ascend to the top like he did because they had a quarterback change at Central Florida. But Perriman was a stud. I've been very disappointed. It's unfortunate the kid can't get on the field. I do think he has the potential to be an NFL player and to be very productive at this level, but I haven't seen him on the field. Now, we do have some downside with Martavis Bryant. Once again, you know, he's being penalized, allegedly, for smoking marijuana. I'm not going to get into that again.
That's a different discussion, yeah. And I think we're both on the same page there, where I would rather have a guy that's smoking a joint out there on the field than a dude that has pictures coming out of him beating up on his woman, but he's, you know, out for 4 games.
Yeah, I mean, from a moral standpoint, yeah, it's not absolutely even close, but yes. Mm-hmm. So the fact that, but we do have to say Martavis Bryant is out for the year. I would still right now in a dynasty league, I prefer Martavis Bryant because at the end of the day, we know that he can do it. We have not seen that with Breshad Perriman, unfortunately. So I'd go Martavis Bryant.
Yeah, same here. Last question we got, you know, heading down to Miami, kind of circling back onto some running backs. Do you guys see Arian Foster having more impact on Ajayi or Kenyon Drake? Will Foster assume the role as passing down back that was thought to be Drake's early on, or will he become the de facto back that gets spelled by Ajayi?
I actually think right now Kenyon Drake has almost zero value in fantasy football leagues unless you're in a dynasty. I had questions about Drake coming out of Alabama. I wasn't as high on him as other scouting departments or other scouts. I think he's an interesting player. I think he was a gimmick player. Maybe he can develop into a full-time PPR back, but I don't think he was as good as Charles Sims was coming out of West Virginia. So I'm not a big Drake fan. I think this definitely lowers the value of Kenyon Drake the most. I think it impacts Jay Ajayi early in the season. In the last 3 years, I believe, if my memory serves me, Arian Foster's only played 25 games. So there is risk that Arian Foster can stay on the field. I believe that there, I've heard a couple people mention this. I don't think there is a running back who has bounced back from a severe Achilles heel like the one suffered by Arian Foster. So I'm very concerned about Arian Foster making it. To me, it just means Ajayi comes out at a better value, and you've got to be patient. I don't think Ajayi will get a ton of carries early. I do think they're going to open up with Foster. But remain patient. Draft Ajayi later. And just expect at one point that Ajayi will get his shot on the field for the Dolphins this year. But Foster's going to probably start off as a lead dog, and Drake has almost no value now.
Yep, I think you said it just about perfectly. I agree 100%. All right, so here we got a few more things we wanted to go over. So let's just kind of speed through this last little bit, section of who you got. So I'll give you two players. You tell me who you got, and you got to give me 30 seconds to a minute on why you lean that way. Sound good?
Yeah, perfect. Love it.
Perfect. So first one, Kelvin Benjamin, Michael Floyd.
We discussed it earlier. I'm definitely going Michael Floyd. I think the Cardinals have the top offense in the NFC. They have a potential to score over 500 points. I'm taking Floyd in that one.
Okay, yep. I'm actually leaning the other way in this one. I'll take Kelvin Benjamin. I think that he is going to step back in as the number one target for Cam Newton. He's going to get most of the looks in the red zone. Obviously, Greg Olsen is there too, but he's, you know, getting up there in age. He should still be good this year, but give me Kelvin Benjamin as the number one option in the, you know, Cam Newton's number one option in the high-powered offense. Next group pair grouping, we got Randall Cobb versus Doug Baldwin.
I probably am going to be the contrarian here, but I'm going to take Doug Baldwin. I really believe that the Seattle offense is going to be dramatically different this year. I believe that this is Russell Wilson's offense now. They have talent at the wide receiver position. They're going to throw the football. I'm taking Doug Baldwin over Randall Cobb.
Awesome. Another one. I'm on the other side. I got Randall Cobb here. I am down on him a little bit compared to the consensus rankings, but he is still going to be the number one target for Aaron Rodgers. I'll take that guy as my number one, my number two receiver, maybe my number one on, you know, certain bye weeks all the time. So give me Randall Cobb. Next one, Torrey Smith versus Kamar Aiken.
I'm going Kamar Aiken. I've been drafting him all over the place. I've loved his value all offseason. I'm pretty clairvoyant on the Baltimore Ravens receiver core. Many people are like, well, who's going to be the guy? When I did my studies, I watched the film. What I see is Kamar Aiken is definitely the best receiver on that roster right now as far as a complete route runner. I'm going Kamar Aiken.
Yep, I'm with you on this one. Give me Kamar Aiken. Torrey Smith is what he is at this point. He's, you know, a deep threat field stretcher that's not even that good at it. He'll have a few games here and there where he'll put up points, but I think it's, you know, going to be good luck picking out which games that is, whereas Aiken, you should be able to plug him in there, and he'll be able to put up decent production most weeks. Moving down, again, we got Sterling Shepard versus DeSean Jackson.
So, I'm going to base this one on ADP value. I'm going to take DeSean Jackson because it's going to cost you a lot less of an investment to go DeSean Jackson than to go to Sterling Shepard. Sterling Shepard is the bright new shiny object, and I like him coming out of Oklahoma. He is in the right offense with Eli Manning and the New York Giants, but you're going to have to pay for Sterling Shepard. I'll wait a couple rounds, and I'm very comfortable getting DeSean Jackson. I think he's a value at where he's going in ADP right now.
Yeah, in a standard one-year league, give me DeSean Jackson for sure. Much like you said, much lower ADP, and then, you know, more of a proven track record. Dynasty league, give me Sterling Shepard, not very close. Moving on, next guy, Chris Hogan versus Victor Cruz. I'll start this one. There's been, you know, tons of injuries there, but Chris Hogan doesn't strike me as a guy that I'm really that huge on. I think I'd rather take the upside of Victor Cruz there and just hope that he can become healthy and become, you know, 80% of what he used to be.
I'm going to agree with you on that one. If the reports are positive, he's on the field. You know, I live in Connecticut, so we get all the New York newspapers up here. Tons of Giants coverage. You know, he looks healthy. He looks like he can be a contributor. And I chose these because they're actually on ADP, the 58th and the 59th wide receivers coming off the board. So I'm going to take Victor Cruz in this. I think you have upside there.
Yep, absolutely. Last one here, Philip Dorsett versus Sammy Coates.
I think this is very interesting. Again, you have two guys going back-to-back, 54th and 55th on the ADP charts. I'm going to go Sammy Coates here, and the reason why is I think he has the potential to be the second best receiver on Pittsburgh. Now, I don't think he will be. I tend to agree with you that it'll be Marcus Wheaton, but I don't see any path other than injury that Philip Dorsett ends up as the second best receiver in Indianapolis. So I'm going to go Sammy Coates because of the potential to be the second best receiver on Pittsburgh.
Yeah, like we mentioned earlier, I do like Philip Dorsett. I think there is a situation where he could play his way into the number two option in the passing game in Indianapolis. But I am going to take Sammy Coates on this one as well for the same reason that I like Marcus Wheaton. You mentioned it, that second wide receiver spot's wide open. While I do think Marcus Wheaton is going to be that guy, if you told me in week six that Sammy Coates was the starting number two receiver there, I would not be shocked at all. That second receiver there is going to have a lot more upside in Pittsburgh than Indianapolis, because I think they're going to spread it out in Indy more. So our last little section here, we're going to go over, under. So we'll let you start it off. 150 catches for Antonio Brown, over, under.
While I'm going to root for him, and I sure hope he does it, I just don't think he gets 150 catches. If Roethlisberger misses one or two games like he did last year, we see that his targets and his receptions drop. I think Antonio Brown gets around 140. I'm going to say under 150.
Yeah, I'm going to take the under on that one as well, too. I wouldn't be surprised if he led the NFL in receptions. I just don't know if it's going to be on 150 catches. You know, he's been absolutely out of his mind the last 2 years, you know, more than anyone ever expected. And those have been on 129 and 136 catches. So I just think 150 is a little too high. If you set that at 130, I would probably take the over.
I agree with you.
Okay, 11 touchdowns for Julio Jones. I'm going to start this one. I am going to take the under on that one. I think he finishes with between 8 to 10.
I agree with you totally. I looked it up. Julio Jones, shockingly, has only scored double-digit touchdowns once in his career. I think that was in 2009. I'd have to look at it again. I apologize if I get the year wrong. And he only scored 10 in that season. So I think he's going to go under. I also think in Shanahan's offense, he just doesn't target Julio Jones in the red zone. He loves his backs. He loves to run and throw the football to his running backs near the goal line. So I think Julio Jones goes under.
Yep. All right. This one, 90 catches for Golden Tate.
I'm going to go over. I think losing Calvin Johnson just opens up so much opportunity in this Detroit Lions passing game. I think Golden Tate gets more targets than he had last year. I think he's more productive with them this year. So I believe that Golden Tate's going to surpass 90 targets.
I'm going to take under on this one. I think that Golden Tate finishes in that 75 to 80 catch range. I just think that they're going to spread it out there. You know, you got Theo Riddick and Amir Abdullah in the backfield that are going to catch some passes more than a lot of running backs, and that's going to take away a lot. Ebron, you're hoping, takes that next step forward as, you know, a tight end that hopefully lives up to his first-round draft slot. So I'm going to go under slightly for Golden Tate. The next one, 12 touchdowns for Allen Robinson. I love Allen Robinson, but I'm going to take the under slightly on this one. I do think he hits double digits, but I think it's that 10 or 11.
I think I agree with you completely, Jordan. I think with a healthy Julius Thomas, with, you know, a second-year player like T.J. Yeldon near the goal line. He's an underrated pass catcher. Chris Ivory, Allen Hurns. I think he does not reach the 12. I think he gets 10 or 11.
Yep, same here. Next one, 14 games for Sammy Watkins. Pains me to say it. I'm going to take the under. I still think that even in 12 to 13 games, he could be a top 20 fantasy receiver. But I will take the under. I'm not sure that he's going to be 100% right at the start of the year.
So I hate to be on the fence, but I actually think he'll play in 14 games. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's a chicken's way out or something. But I think Sammy Watkins, with those feet, he's had a few problems in the past. But I think he'll play about 14 games. And I agree with you. We discussed it earlier. I think he's easily a top 15 receiver this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the last one here, 50 catches for Josh Gordon. I'm going to take the over on this one. I don't think he blows up for, you know, to be the number one receiver in fantasy in 14 games like he did last, 3 years ago, whenever the last time it is we saw him. But, yeah, I'll give him 50 catches after a four-game suspension. That seems about right.
I'm going to take the under just because of the other concerns and because of the state of that offense in the quarterback position. But I think that's a pretty good number that we were discussing. I think 50 is very interesting. But I'm going to take the under, my friend.
Yeah, same here. All right, well, that kind of wraps up our wide receiver preview. You know, as always, if you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes. The more of those we can get, the higher up in the rankings we'll get. We should be available on essentially every podcast app now. So if you don't have iTunes, leave us a review on whatever podcast app it is that you use. You know, what do you have coming up here at Football Diehards?
We actually are going to have a review of our staff league is coming up. All of the participants had to give a paragraph about their draft strategy, and they had to discuss five of their favorite players and why they drafted them. So that's on Football Diehards. I'm always adding new articles to the Diehards, and right now you can get my entire college football, fantasy football playbook is free on footballdiehards.com. So please go and enjoy that. Even if you don't like college fantasy football, get a head start on who these top prospects will be. And I'm telling you right now, the running back class might be the greatest running back class in the history of the draft. I think it's going to rival the 2014 wide receiver class. So get a head start on who these players are. And feel free to follow me on Twitter at GridironSkull91. I'm always available for any questions. And I love doing the podcast with you, Jordan. It's been a blast today.
Yes, absolutely. Just a few more closing notes. You know, if you like basketball, make sure to check out formerly the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast by Josh Lloyd. That's now the Locked On Basketball Podcast. Josh has teamed up with David Locke. So that's, you know, very exciting stuff there. You know, check out the DynastyBball.com podcast that I host with my other co-host, Adam. You know, it's more of a dynasty look on fantasy basketball. And then, you know, for your fantasy baseball fans out there, make sure to check out, you know, our other sister podcast, the Red Rock Fantasy Baseball Podcast. So unless you got anything else to add, I think we can go ahead and get out of here.
No, have a great day, everyone. Hope you enjoyed the show.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you guys soon.